Sometimes it's really hard to be the first of something or to do something that not a lot of people are doing. And this is why representation matters. Also, like, what's the journey to all that? We're going to dive in this episode into what it's like to be a female founder based on something that is solving your own specific problems. Welcome to the Women of YouTube podcast. This podcast is hosted by me, Desiree Martins. Every week, I'm going to be showing up in your earbuds to inspire you on your YouTube journey with killer interviews with women YouTube creators, deep dives into the inner workings of how YouTube works, and discussing all the things about YouTube culture and the impact it is having on our world. This podcast is brought to you in partnership with vidIQ, where they help you maximize your video's YouTube reach by studying titles, descriptions, tags, and playlists relevant to your subject matter, while also studying your competitors to help you know exactly what you should be doing for your YouTube growth. So if you're a female creator looking to grow your channel, level up your content, and learn from the best women creators on the platform to get you on your way to YouTube success and future-proofing your income, this is the perfect place for you. Let's do this. What's up, ladies? Welcome to episode of the Women of Video Podcast. Super pumped to be up in your earballs today talking about all things content creation, planning, organization, female foundership, all of the things. I had the best conversation with Natalie Barbu. Like, honestly, I don't even know why I say that. Every conversation I have that I bring to you is a fantastic conversation. And yes, there is an archive of videos and podcasts that you will never see because they were not great podcasts. Like, there's a vault. We don't touch the vault, right? But I only want to bring you the good stuff. My talk with Natalie was so great because she has created a project management, like content management, content creation, organizational tools, content planning, project management, all in one place. Like, the objective of this tool is to allow for you to minimize all of the things that you need. So you don't need like Notion, you don't need your Googles, you don't need your social networking planning stuff. Like, you have one place, one price, one thing to manage all the things and to make your life easier, because that's what she needed. She saw a problem she was having as a full-time creator and she wanted to create it. But we also went on this journey together through this conversation about like how she got here, how she spent 8 years trying to become a full-time content creator, how she's building in public, what all this looks like, and just some really deep conversations between the two of us that I think you're going to really enjoy, because it's not going to be so much about like, you know, being a content creator, but like being a woman and being a person in this space. So it's going to be good. I hope you're geared up, ready to do whatever you're doing. I hope that like you're at the beginning of your drive to work or like on that walk with your pup or doing those dishes or whatever it is that you do when you're listening to or watching this podcast. I hope you're ready because it's a really fun conversation that I'm so grateful I got to have. As always, before we dive in, like this comes out the week of the Christmas time. And guys, I am just so happy I get to spend my time with you. Like, this has been a year. Oh my God. A year of just straw go busting my way through this. And I am so grateful that I have you guys to be my steady path. I get to do this with, I get to show up with you vulnerable, real, and connect with you. And I just, it's just so many things. I'm just so grateful for you guys. My greatest present ever. I'm so thankful that we get to do this. We're starting the new year with some really fun, great, awesome things. I'm going to talk about next week's episode that's after this is like my 2024 predictions, which you can expect in the creator space, what we can do to adapt, change, adjust, and be present. Also, what's happening here, Women of Video, right? So please, I would love if you would head over to our Patreon to get signed up, because that's where the community is, the fun extras, the talking, the connecting. We're going to be diving into some really great stuff start of the year, and I don't want you to miss out on that because it's an amazing community with lots of that. So take action now. Go join the Patreon, please. It's like $1, literally $1. And it'll just help you get in and get you access to all of the goodies, the good goods that are over there. And just have an amazing holiday. Take time for you. Take time for the fam. Just reflect on stuff. Don't try and work. Like, do something selfish and just fun and ridiculous that you'd be like, my busy self would hate me for doing this. Like, take care of you. It's okay. I promise. I gave you permission. It's my present to you. Permission to take care of you. So let's dive into this conversation. And I am so grateful for you. Thanks. Welcome to Women of Video Pod, Natalie. I'm so excited to dive into your creator journey and all the things that make up for this. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
To get started, tell us, what do you create on the internet?
Yeah. So I create oh, wait, are you still there? Okay, sorry. I wasn't sure if that happens. Okay.
You're totally fine.
So I am a lifestyle creator, but I talk all about entrepreneurship, content creation, productivity as well. I have my own business, so I love to share the behind the scenes of building a startup and being a founder. But I've been doing it for the past 12 years, so my audience has just really grown up with me, and I've had the privilege of being able to share my life on the internet and having people grow up with me. And so that's why I like to say lifestyle, because like nothing is really off limits, but I guess my focus is more like talking about content creation, talking about entrepreneurship and productivity.
All right. I love that. Okay. So how did you get to this? Like how did you start and what led you to this creator path?
Yeah. So when I was 15, I'm 27 now, but when I was 15 in 2011, social media was not where it was today. It was definitely the wild, wild, wild west. It was the very early days, and I was just bored, honestly. I was bored. I was watching other YouTubers at home, and this is before people really started watching YouTubers. Like, it was like early days where it was like Charlie bit my finger, like a few years after that, but like those types of videos were on the internet. And then all of a sudden, girls around my age were starting to post makeup tutorials and filming hauls in their bedroom. And, you know, it was just, it felt like girls that looked like me were posting videos on the internet. And so I was like, oh, this looks fun. Like, I feel like I could do something like this. And I always had an interest in like fashion and beauty. And I always had an interest in just like video. I would always make home videos. I would always edit them on my parents' computer. I would force my siblings to like join in and skits with me. So I always had that interest when I was younger. And so when I discovered YouTube, I was like, wait a second, I want to do this. And so I started in 2011, started just like posting for fun. And it just grew from there. By the time I graduated college, I was able, pretty much a year later, able to do it full time. So it was definitely a long journey for me, but it was slow and steady, and I was consistent with it, and I was able to do it full time 8 years later. So like, it shouldn't take everyone that long, but for me, it took a long time to do it full time.
What was it that was sort of leading up or stopping you from being able to be a creator full time?
Money. I mean, I just didn't want to leave until I made enough money to like support my lifestyle. So I made it a goal for mine to not quit my job until I made like at least double my salary, or like close to double my salary. Because I knew that going off on your own and doing your own thing is a risk in and of itself. And so if I was going to quit, I wanted to make more. You know, I was like, okay, I need to have some security. Like, what if I don't get paid for 3 months? What if something happens? Like, I don't have that like job security. So that's why I had it be my goal to like make almost double my salary. And so I quit my job once I hit that goal.
Okay. So what were the revenue streams that you were able to create that allowed for you to go full time?
Yeah, so a lot of it was brand deals. That's still the number one way that I make money today. So working with brands, sponsorships, all that sort of stuff. At the time, I also on YouTube, I had AdSense as well. So that's different than brand deals. It's like the ads that YouTube pays you. And then I also had a Patreon at the time where I was helping creators monetize, like help them treat themselves more as a business and giving them like content creator tips. I had consulting sessions where I would do like one-on-one coaching calls and with other creators, trying to help them, you know, treat it more like a business. And I then started my podcast. So I started to make money on ads as well with my podcast. And so all of those were my like streams of income at the time.
Okay. Now, the thing that I love the most about like your journey as a creator, because I found you on LinkedIn, which I think is an unusual way for a lot of people to spend their time as a creator. And if I do my predictions on like what happens in 2024, I think the use of LinkedIn is going to increase for creators, like for professionalism and connecting and spending more time there. Because I'm like, that's where the brands are. It's where the businesses are. It's where the influencer networkers are, the managers, all the things. Like, they're there. There's a thriving like creator culture that's happening on LinkedIn. And I would love to be able to connect with you. And I love that you create, though, it's so many different kinds of content. You have your podcast, you have your YouTube channel, you're doing vertical video, you have like LinkedIn. How are you managing all of that? And like, why are you choosing to create so much different kinds of content in so many different places?
Yeah, well, I think today you have to kind of be everywhere all at once. Unfortunately, I don't think you can just have one platform and be like, this is the only platform I'm going to be on. You have to have at least two, I would say, like Instagram and something else, or LinkedIn and something else. Like, people need to be able to find you in multiple places in order to grow your personal brand. And so I have always wanted to be like ahead of the trends. I've always wanted to kind of be one of the early adopters, similarly to how I was with YouTube. I feel like there's so many advantages in being an early adopter. And so that's why I'm always like eager to try anything new. With LinkedIn, I wasn't necessarily an early adopter, but I feel like you said, not a lot of content creators are on there yet. And I found a lot of success on LinkedIn. Like, I haven't necessarily been paid from LinkedIn, but I found a lot of connections, started building meaningful relationships from LinkedIn, which I think influencer industry is all about, building relationships. But I always have wanted to be like ahead and try new things. How I manage it, though, that's actually why I started my business, Rella, was because I was feeling so overwhelmed with all of the different platforms I was on. I had brand deals. I was trying to post everywhere. I was trying to organize all of my content and my content calendar, along with like my campaigns and keeping track of my revenue and what I had to do and all of the deliverables and contracts and everything like that. And I was feeling so overwhelmed that I wanted to start Rella, which is this one-stop shop for creators. It's a project management tool for creators and managers and their teams to manage their business in one place. So anywhere from planning and scheduling content to keeping track of all of your brand deals and deliverables and deadlines, we integrate with all the social media platforms. We integrate with Google Calendar. We're really like an end-to-end, back-end management tool for creators and their teams. And so that has helped me with organization. Like, I can visually see everything I need to do that week, which platforms I need to post on. I can repurpose my content on Rella. So if I upload on Instagram, I can then repurpose it to TikTok and YouTube Shorts. So I'm not manually having to go into all those platforms and, you know, upload. I'm like streamlining it and automating it. I can visually see like which campaigns I'm working on. It's just been like the biggest help for organizing my content and being able to not only run a business, but like still be everywhere at once, which is so hard nowadays. Like, that's literally why I started Rella, was because it was such a mess of doing it before.
I love how you talk like very clearly, like how it's one place to do everything, because there really is so many different places to be, and like, or like not places to be, like so many different tools that are happening that can become really cumbersome and frustrating to manage. I know I have been there personally. Like, I love this post that you had posted up on LinkedIn that was like this diagram talking about how it's one post so that you can do everything. Like, Rella can replace QuickBooks, Slater, Google Calendar, Google Sheets, Notion, Planoly, Asana. Like, it's so many things. It's so necessary, because I know for me, like, I do this too. I have almost all of those tools that I'm using all the time. And, you know, with the agency that I run, like, we use a project management tool. We have a social media scheduling tool. We use Google for collaborations and file sharing and all this kind of stuff with our different clients and our teams. And it can be really overwhelming, and it also can get really expensive. Like, I just got a notice from my project management tool, like, hey, we're raising our prices. And so it just gets really stressful. So what made you build something that solved this problem and kind of puts yourself in the position of being a competitor to all those other tools?
Yeah, for me, it was just like, I wanted it. Like, I was like, wait, why doesn't this exist? Like, there needs to be something better, because I was using spreadsheets, project management tools. I tried to build like Notion templates to customize it to like help me as a creator. And I just like hated all of it. Like, I always felt like disorganized, and like, I didn't know where something was, or I was missing deadlines, and it was just like such a mess. And so I looked to find a solution, and there wasn't anything out there. And I'm a very impulsive person where like, I kind of dive head first, like similarly to like when I started all of the, you know, when I started on YouTube, when I started like on any social media platform that I started, when I started my podcast, like, I kind of just jump in and then I figure it out later. And so with my business, I was like, wait, this doesn't exist. I want to build this. So I kind of just jumped in. Like, I was like, okay, how do I build this? Like, let me put together all the features I want. Let me go find a developer. Like, in my head, it's not that hard. I was like, how hard can that be? It's very hard. Like, once I got into it and started like learning how much goes into this. But at first, I just kind of started like asking people questions and started talking to developers and started figuring out what it took to build this. And I started becoming like obsessed with this idea and started talking to other creators of what they use and if they would want to see something like this. And I just got an overwhelming response of like, yes, this is exactly what we need. And so I was like, okay, I have to be the one to do this. And so in the beginning, I was very naive. I didn't know how much work it would take. I didn't know how long it would take. I had no idea about anything. But I'm so glad that I did it, because even though it's definitely very challenging, it's helping so many people, including myself. Like, I use it every single day. And so I'm just, like, glad that something like this exists, and I'm glad that I'm able to be the one that does it.
So one of the things that people often forget when it comes to creator stuff, like, it's very easy for us to get wrapped up in the creative work. It's really easy for us to tune out and avoid and almost not manage the administrative side and, like, the operation side of our businesses and brands. And I think that what this tool will do was allow for that to work really well, especially as, like, we as creators so we're bringing in other people and support systems to help our businesses. Like, there's actually a new podcast that's come out that's called, it's like the COO, it's like the Creator Operating Podcast by, like, Green. Yeah. And it's like this idea, it's like, how are the people behind the creatives, the faces, like, how are they managing things and doing things? And I always love to joke too, I have an accountability group that I do, and there's this guy in there, he's talking about, like, this brand that reached out to him. He's like, they want him to create for their brand. And he's like, I know what I'm going to do. I know what the videos are going to be. I know what they're going to be titled. I have a vision for the thumbnails. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, make sure when you put together your pitch, you include all of the back end deliverable things, like when it's going to be, what the show notes are going to be, like all of the details. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And I was like, then you're not going to get the gig.
Right.
And he was like, well, that's the not fun parts. And I was like, yeah, but those are also some of the most important parts. Like, and it's not to say that just anyone can create, but it's all the little details of execution that allow for things to be good.
Yeah. My brother recently started a podcast, and he was like, oh, like, I'm just going to, like, ask guests to come on and record. And, you know, and then he did that. He started, like, recording his first few episodes, and he's like, wait, I have to create an Instagram, a TikTok, a YouTube. How do we distribute this podcast? I need short form clips. It needs to go out this many times. Wait, what are show notes? Like, I don't even, you know, and, like, all this, I'm like, it's not just hitting play, recording, and being like, great, good to go. Like, there's honestly the back end side of things is what takes the longest. Like, I can create a podcast in 45 minutes, easy. Editing is going to take 2 hours. Then figuring out the social media marketing plan for that is going to take another hour, 2 hours. Editing the short form content from the long form content upload, like, that takes way longer than just hitting record and recording. That's, like, the easiest part.
100%. Like, and people, and it's so funny because, like, when I coach people, like, actually, like, business professionals and things like that, to them, the idea of being on camera is the hardest, most terrifying part. And I'm like, sweet pea, like, that's the easiest part. They're like, put all of the words and the things and the looking and the all. I'm like, yeah, but then, like, you have to do something with it. Like, that's the challenge. And I know that I faced this with the agency, where it's like, when we brought in the video piece, I'm like, okay, we need you to do these things. And, like, they seem on board and they have to do it. And, like, that's where, like, they just stop. Like, they're like, we can't do this. We're going to have to go do a different service or whatever. Because for us to be effective in this way doesn't work for us, because it requires time, effort that we just don't want to do. And I was like, it's so interesting to me what people won't do when it's what's best for their brand.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, even for us at Rella, like, I have two co-founders and they're technical, and one of my co-founders is now kind of helping me out with marketing. Just, like, we're kind of having, like, all hands on deck with it. And he's a developer. He's an engineer. To him, it's like, marketing isn't hard. Like, that's, you know, easy. And now he's doing it. And it's like, oh no, this is, like, really hard. And it's, you know, you don't know what works and what doesn't. You have to test out a bunch of things. You have to do so much. There's so much work that goes into it. And so I feel like a lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah, there's so much that goes into it. Like, we could go on and on, I think, about, like, all the problems and the things that people do and that they're just forget about. But I just find it to be, I'm just so grateful your tool exists, because it's going to be super helpful. I literally share it with my accountability group. Like, the tool is what brought me to, like, wanting to talk to you, because I'm like, this is super fascinating, because creators are great, but creators don't tend to just, like, make stuff to solve problems. And so it's really great that, like, you have been able to do that, because it's a rare, I think, brain to just be that action oriented. And I just commend you for that.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. We got to get your agency on it if they're not already.
Oh yeah, well, we'll have a whole offline conversation. Yeah, 100%, like, that will happen. So, look, I'm really sorry to interrupt, but did you know that YouTube is the world's second biggest search engine? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. But that's why every creator truly needs to be using vidIQ to grow their YouTube channel. vidIQ's tech helps you tailor your video ideas to match what people are searching for right now on YouTube. And once you're ready to upload, well, it starts optimizing and getting you all the details that you need to make sure your videos are getting noticed. If you really want to dive in more and get started for free, please head over to thewomenofyoutube.com/vidIQ to get started on this YouTube channel changing tool that is going to make things so much easier for you. All right, let's get back to it.
Okay, so I would love to talk about your journey to where you are as a creator, because I think that what's really great for us to talk about the highlights and like where we are and what we like, how we're living our best life era, our growth era. But let's talk about the times like getting to here. What were some of the struggles that you faced personally and maybe even professionally on the creator path to full time and being able to do this as your job?
Yeah, I think when you're a creator, there's a big period where you have to kind of like fake it till you make it. Like when you're first starting out, you don't have an audience. So everyone starts at zero. And I always tell people that, like whenever they're like, I want to start on TikTok, I want to do YouTube, I want to start a podcast. I'm like, you have to understand that you are going to start at zero and you need to be okay with that for a while. And you have to say like, hey guys, like I'm doing blah, 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 blah. And there's no one going to be watching you at first. So you kind of have to like fake being a creator in the beginning. But as soon as you start, you know, providing value, as soon as you start creating the content people want to see, people are going to come and you're going to find your audience. But I think too many people, and I've definitely struggled with this, focus so much on the numbers at first that they give up super early. And I think there's even a stat that's like majority of podcasts, I don't know the percentage, but majority of podcasts don't make it past 3 episodes because like everyone wants to start, but no one wants to continue. And I think it's because people focus too much on numbers very early on, where you should be focusing on creating like content pillars. What value are you going to be providing? What are you going to talk about? How is this going to be like a long lasting business for you? And that was something that I struggled with a lot in the beginning, was like focusing too much on numbers. And if I wasn't happy with something, I would be like, well, should I even keep doing this? So overcoming that, I think, is key, because it took me a long time to do it full time. Like 8 years is a really long time to finally be like, okay, now I can like quit my job and focus on this. And so I had to really like let go of that and continue just creating content that I loved creating, putting content out there that was providing value towards my audience and like constantly showing up for my audience. And I think that's the hardest part of any creator, is the mental mindset of like showing up even if you're not where you want to be.
I think that that's super insightful about showing up where you don't want to be. I get really hung up on things when people want to get into content creation. And I think that a lot of mentalities around it are like, my biggest one is like, you can make money from day one as being a content creator. It might not be full-time income revenue, but you can be building something out from the beginning. And I think people's impatience also really gets in their way. Like, you have to think about, like, if we were to look at like traditional careers, like the way that like the patriarchy has us doing things right now, we graduate from high school, we go to college, and we do something for 4 years. The vast majority of that degree is super pointless, a retelling of what we already did in high school. And then we have to go get an entry-level job. And then we have to do that for a certain amount of years where we're growing and advancing and doing things to get to other promotions or new organizations and pay points. And that takes time. So I think, honestly, when you look at what you did with like that 8-year period of time, that honestly seems like a pretty respectable amount of time to go through if you're thinking about traditional career path to get to where you wanted to be from an income perspective. So I, again, like, it's a great path to understand. It's important to remember that like we have to grow and get better, because like when we start anything new, we're going to be terrible at it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. And I always tell people, don't compare your first video to someone's 100th video, because people are like, oh, I don't have like a cute enough room, or I don't have like good quality camera, or my lighting isn't great. I'm like, just start, because content creation is kind of like a muscle. You have to continue to create content in order to get better at it. Like, you're not going to get better if you just watch content and wish that you had a better system. Like, there's always going to be someone better than you. There's always going to be someone with a higher quality video than you. You just have to start and start like flexing that muscle to get used to it, and then you'll get better. Like, I cringe at my first videos, but I even cringe at like my videos from 2 years ago. And like 2 years ago, I was cringing at my videos from 4 years ago. So like you're, and I'm sure in a year from now, I'm going to be like, oh, look at that video. That was so bad. Like you just have to like get over that and just like start posting.
I think that's important. And I think that's super necessary. So you have the Real Real podcast, R-E-E-L-R-E-A-L podcast, which I love that idea of like social media is your, is like your filter, your screen, your perfectly curated version of yourself. But like, let's get real on how you got there. And I love that. So talk to us about what led to you doing that podcast and how does that support you on your professional business journey?
Yeah. So I started, again, similarly to how I started with my YouTube channel, I started listening to podcasts and I was like, wait a second, I want to do something like this. This is so much fun. Sorry if you hear my coffee maker in the background. I don't know if the mic picks it up. But I just wanted to start recording podcasts because I saw other people that I really admired and I really liked, and I wanted to, you know, I thought I could do it too. And so literally I listened to podcasts for 1 week. Like I think I listened to maybe like 4 or 5 podcasts, and then I bought a mic on Amazon. I bought like the equipment and I was like, I'm just going to do it. And I just kind of like jumped right in. And it's been so much fun. I've been able to interview the most amazing guests. I've been able to have my friends and family on. I've been able to really like have like therapy sessions on the mic as well. Like I'll do solo episodes where I talk about my life, and like it's like the one place I feel very comfortable being super vulnerable on for some reason. So it's been great. But yeah, I view social media as like the highlight reel and my podcast as the Real Reel. So that's where the name comes from.
I talk about this a lot when I speak and talk to people. It's like, you need to have like one main place that you create long form content, and then you want to have a support platform where you can like connect, be realer, build those like stronger bonds or relationships. And usually it's around YouTube. Like YouTube's where you collect the community, and then like you can bring them over to Instagram and connect and be deeper and do that specific thing. But what I think is like an added bonus to it is being able to have that long form, unfiltered, like conversational type content that isn't based on like, I got to edit, I have to like be snappy, I have to have these visual cues, I'm only allowed to talk about this one narrow specific thing because that's what YouTube wants us to do. And I love that podcasting gives us that place to dive deep and do more and spend more time on something in a really fun and specific way. How are you using your podcast to amplify what you're doing with your brand and your business?
Yeah, so my podcast, I think podcasting is such a great way to network with anyone. Like if you want to talk to someone, if you want to pick someone's brain, if you DM them and you're like, hey, want to just grab a virtual coffee and like talk for 30 minutes, you might not get a response. You ask someone, hey, do you want to come for an hour on my podcast? Oh yeah, sign me up. So I think number one, it's a great way to network. But I always like to use it as just like a, like I get to use my platform to amplify someone else's voice or someone else's story as well, because that's essentially what you're doing. Like you having me on this podcast, like yeah, your guests are, or your audience is, you know, learning and you know, they're getting value out of it, but like you're letting me share my story on your platform. And I loved doing that with other people because selfishly, like I love hearing other people's stories and I want to ask the questions that like I never would have asked if it was just like one-on-one coffee time or whatever, or via DMs. So I think for my business and my network, it's definitely amplified it, but also for my personal brand, like you said, people should have long-form content. Like there's only so much you can learn about someone with short-form content. Long-form is where people really get to know you, they get to feel connected to you. And as someone who's been doing this for 12 years, that's long-form content is the only reason I've been able to do it for 12 years, because my audience knows me. You know, they like really know me through my YouTube channel, through my podcast. And I think that there's something like so special about that, is long form is like the best way to create an engaged audience. Like I can't tell you on TikTok, for example, there are some people I'm like, oh my God, I love them on TikTok. I don't know their names. Like I do not know their names because I just scroll. So like when I'm trying to search for someone, I'm like, crap, what are their names? Like I don't remember, but I recognize their face and I recognize the content that they're doing. But long form, it's like you really feel like you connect and you know the person.
I couldn't have said that better myself. Like, and I think that's why it's so interesting to see like how so many people are like transitioning from Instagram and TikTok over to YouTube. But at the same time, like from like a counterpoint to it, like, you know, YouTube is like shorts and we got to do shorts and we have to be doing this more. And you can only create a short channel. You can't put shorts on your long form content. Otherwise it'll mess up your long form content. It's this whole drama. It's this whole frustrating thing. And I really hope that in 2024, we see a better
connection between the two kinds of content, and that like YouTube figures out their own way of having shorts be effective rather than just trying to copy TikTok.
I agree. Yeah. Because I don't scroll on shorts. I don't know about you.
I sometimes I'll get caught by something, but I'll go back and go back to like my home feed and things like that. I also tend to watch YouTube like on my TV and stuff. So
me too.
It's sort of like it's literally not the screen for me to watch that on.
Yeah. So. I wonder in the future if that we'll start seeing like vertical TVs, like where you can scroll that way, or like a something that can like flip.
That would be pretty interesting. I know that like they do it now with monitors, like people will like rotate their monitors, yeah, so they can like consume more. And that kind of, I don't know. Well, it's going to be interesting to see. Like my kids, I have a 9-year-old and 8-year-old, and we've given them like our old phones so they can like play Roblox and be on Facebook Messenger kids with their friends and stuff. And they sometimes will be like on their phone and be like, why don't you guys take a break from your phone and go watch on the TV? And they're like, no. I'm like, guys, like you have to, it's bad for your eyes. So it's going to be interesting to see like how they do things and like how they want their technology to run and exist.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I'm interested in seeing it.
I know things were getting really good over in our interview, but I wanted to take a minute to remind you that we now have a new home for the Women in Video community. You can head over to Patreon right now, and we have the link in our show notes that you can go find it there, where we're going to be able to have after show information. We're going to have chats. We're going to have information and just come together to answer questions and connect and support each other as creators. This whole creator thing can be really confusing and can be really lonely. So let's come together to support each other like the badass women that we are. Head over to patreon.com/womenofvideo to get started now. Yeah. So as a woman creator, have you ever run into anything specifically for you that's been like, ooh, this is happening to me because I'm a woman, or I've had to deal with this issue that has been like really female specific that you've had to deal with?
Yeah, I think all women creators probably deal with this, but it's people don't take you seriously. Like in the real world, quote unquote, I think. Like you tell someone that you do content and it's like, oh, you must be dumb, you must be self-centered. Like I think it's a very negative connotation even to this day. Or some people will even assume like, oh, you do like the type of content you create, they'll think it's like, oh, you're just like posting selfies or like bikini photos or whatever. And it's like, no, I and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think people just assume the worst in you, and they assume that you don't have like quality if you're a content creator. But I've noticed that it's very like female specific. Like I don't think male creators get that same connotation. It's like, oh man, that's so cool, like that you're doing that, like what type of content do you create, because they can like relate to it and they like it. Or it's like, oh, you post like fashion and makeup videos, like you're basic, or you get a, it's a very different stereotype than what a guy receives. And I remember when I quit my job, it was during the wave of like a bunch of creators quitting their jobs, especially YouTubers, to do social media full time. And I used to make content about, you know, working at a corporate job, working in a consulting firm, and then I quit. And I was so nervous because I was like, people like me because I am relatable and I have like a normal job. And, you know, that shows that I'm like smart and intelligent. If I just do content creation, what are people going to think? My audience reacted super well to it. They were very happy for me. I still maintained my audience after that and grew even more after that. But there was a journalist who asked, you know, if she could like write a piece on us and ask for some quotes for like these YouTubers that were quitting their jobs. And I was like, yeah, sure. Like it was this big company. It was for Mashable. And I was like, oh, I'm so excited to like be in this news article. And she wrote about like me and like maybe like 5 other girls that had quit our jobs to do social media full time. And it was like a very negative piece on like why we're like how it's pretty much like how we're losing our relatability, how people aren't going to want to watch us anymore, how like we're kind of doing everything in vain for being full-time creators. And the examples she used of creators that were like doing it full-time but, you know, had a good reputation or were doing it like, I don't know, they were like better because they weren't trying to be relatable. They were, you know, successful at being full-time creators and making that their about their content. And it was all guys. Like every example she used was all different male creators that were doing it full-time. But the creators that she used of like, they're going to lose their audience, they're not relatable anymore, their people are going to be tired of them, like just talking about their lives, it was all women. And to me, I'm like, even if you don't realize it, you're like, that is, you are being sexist by using those examples versus us. And it was, I mean, it was a woman that wrote the article too. So that, like, that has always stuck to me, because I'm like, we have, all of the girls mentioned in that article have all been doing it now full time for years. We've all grown. We've all become very successful. And the men that she mentioned have also become very successful. It's not like a negative thing on them at all, but like, why are you signaling us out just because we like to talk about our lives and we like to talk about our interests? Like, I think for so long, a lot of like female interests have been pushed aside as being like stupid or basic or anything like that. And so that just like further proved that people thought that way. And it was like super disheartening. It definitely made all of us like super upset that that was the piece. Cause also that wasn't like the way that she presented it to us was not like that when she like got our quotes and talked to us on the phone. So yeah, that was like pretty like negative. I would say like I was super disheartened by that. And nowadays I think it's gotten better. But still, you can still see the connotation when you like, I always hate telling people like, oh, what do you do for a living? Like, I don't want to tell them that I like do content because of the reaction it might get. And I'm like, wait, why? Like, I shouldn't feel embarrassed by that.
Girl, I hear you on this. I live in a smaller town in Michigan, but it's not like, it's kind of affluent. Like there's money here. And I will talk to people like, oh, what do you do? Like, oh, I'm a full-time YouTuber and content creator. Oh, that's cute. What does your husband do? Mm-hmm. And then I have to be like, my husband's a stay-at-home dad. And they look at me like a comic book character. Like, what? Like, then they're like, I'm going to need you to explain to me how you live here. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, have kids and a husband and a mortgage doing this cute job.
Oh, yeah.
Like, stop.
Yeah.
Like, stop. Just because you don't understand it doesn't mean that it is not possible. No, I'm not selling pictures of my feet on the internet. Like, I am literally like talking about social media and professionalism and talking to women and podcasting and like coaching, consulting, traveling the country, teaching people how to do this. And people just like have the hardest time wrapping their minds around it. And I wonder if it's not just the fact that they don't understand it. I wonder if there's also this level of envy around it, that like people are able to make an income talking about their lives. And that woman who's that reporter, like, I know that you probably have gone through a lot of phases with this. Like, she might be envious of that. Like, she reports on stuff and she talks about things and she journalists about things, but she has to do that under the guise and the eyes of someone else telling her how to do that and what to do and report and get paid a specific set amount of money. And she doesn't have to do what you do. I also think the whole idea like about men being more successful in space, this is why this podcast, the Women of Video, literally exists, because men just kept trying to tell me that I was cute and go in the corner and just like stay in my lane. And like, when I wanted to find other women to learn from, because they're going to understand my personal struggles around these things, I had to dig to find them. Mm-hmm. And like, the industry supported it and it's all this stuff. And it's like, just now, like in this year, I feel like women are finally cracking the surface on things. And my biggest teller for this was around Vid Summit. I launched this podcast at Vid Summit in 2019. And I've been very open and honest about how we feel about how that conference specifically is just a bro fest, so predominantly run by men. It's like over 60, they have over 60 speakers at that conference, like 62 or something. And it was like only like 10 or 11 would be women. And it was this whole idea that's like, women create content. And then like, they would be given really crappy spots to speak, like before the keynotes or on panels with other men. And so this year, after years of it, like, I literally did not go to Vid Summit in 2022 because I saw the lineup and it was the same problem. And I was like, why would I spend this money? I literally took all of the money I had planned to spend to go to Vid Summit, my flight, my hotel, my ticket, all that. I took my husband to Rome instead. I was like, I will invest in my marriage rather than my business because you are not getting this. But this year, when they did it in Dallas, it was saturated with women and they had so many women speakers. And like, the guy that's the founder of the event was literally like, we want women to come. I'm giving away tickets to women creators specifically. Like, we want women to come because the constant feedback that we were getting is there were so many men, and the women that spoke were some of the highest earning, highest performing creators. And they were able to be creating these like 7 and 8 figure businesses without having to have bazillions of followers and do crazy, ridiculous stunts and over the top kinds of content. And it's like, this is what we need more of. These are the stories that we need to tell. And I think also as an industry of creators, if we would stop just focusing and highlighting all these massive creators that have obviously done wonderful things and bring it down a bit more to like what I would consider like a middle-class creator and talk about their journeys, I think that we would be able to have more successful creators on all the platforms across the board.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. And even like about what you said with VidSummit, how it's mainly men speaking and there's so few women. Women are the reason the creator economy even exists. Like, women were the first influencers. We were the first ones to join the creator economy. I mean, for the most part, of course, there were men, but predominantly it has been run or majority run by women. Now it's been a little bit more like split, but in the beginning especially it was. And I even see that with like creator economy startups, like in the tech space, that's another very male dominated space that I'm in. And in that space, there are so many creator economy startups. I can count on like one or two hands how many are founded by women versus the rest founded by men.
I can only think of one other one. That's Creative Juice.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's like Selma, and it's like, and you, I don't, oh, well, there's Kapwing. Kapwing is with Julie, and that's another one. That's not, it's more like a tool rather than like, it's like a video kind of creator tool, but it's not creator economy specific.
Yeah. There's not a lot of us out there. And so, and yet these creator economy startups are servicing millions of women. So it's so important. And that's why, like, whenever I show Rella to people, whenever I like give a demo, whenever I like tell people about it, the biggest compliment we get is, oh my God, you've thought of everything. Or like, oh wow, you really can tell that you have been a creator. Even like little details, like something that is not technically challenging, like syncing up to Google Calendar. Like your content calendar with all of your deadlines syncs to Google Calendar. That is so simple. Like, that's not a hard technical task, but it's the fact that I know that creators and managers use Google Calendar and prefer it, but they still need like a separate spot to just like plan out their content. And like thinking about those things only happens if you are actually a creator yourself in the space. And I'm not saying that like the other people have, you know, I'm not saying that men that have founded it are not creators, but I'm saying a lot of people are just men that have seen an opportunity in the space and have jumped into it. And they not only have they not been creators, but they're not even representative of like majority of the creators out there.
It is. Women bring a unique perspective to things. I was just talking to Shannon Moore. She was a guest a long time ago on the podcast for another podcast I'm doing. And she was talking about how she's one of the only tech creators on YouTube, and that very, especially around like cybersecurity. And she's like, the things I'm able to do and like the perspective that I bring is like, it's a very female specific thing. So like, for example, she talks about the AirPods, the little stick one. She's like, I talk very much openly about how I don't like them because my hair gets caught in them all the time. Like the little sticks that go down. I was like, yeah, I don't like them for that exact reason. I have the Google Buds because they go in my ear and they have the little adjusters. So if you have smaller ears, it goes in easier. Like the Apple AirPods are just like one size fits all, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
And she also talks about like tools and like things that are available from a security standpoint, like from her unique perspective, where she's like, where like all these, my male cohorts talk about like the things in this way. I'm talking about them from this perspective of like, how does the security around this? Is this going to keep me safe? Because I'm always worried about being followed or being found online and being digitally, which can lead to physically in-person harassed. And she's like, my male colleagues don't ever think about that stuff because they've never had to. Mm-hmm. And so women bring that unique perspective because we deal with things in a very different, specific, intentional like way.
Yeah. And like, I'm glad that men haven't had to face that, you know, like I wouldn't want anyone to have to like face that. But the thing is, that's why it's important for women to be, you know, founding companies. It's important for them to be speaking on panels and then, you know, in the room making decisions because their experiences are so unique to the male experience.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Oh, this has been so good. I love having this conversation with you. It's fantastic because it's just a perspective that we don't get enough of.
And I totally agree.
And so I'm so grateful that you have been able to do that. I always love to talk about, well, we talk about the good things and the insights around things. I would love to get a little insight from you for our listeners, which is, what's one of the most overlooked details or mistakes that you see creators making nowadays?
Ooh, I think what I spoke about earlier, where they focus too much on numbers and only chasing like virality, I think that's a huge mistake, because then they're not thinking long term. Like, you can tell when someone's kind of just trying to go viral and that's it. So I think not thinking about long term success and sustainability and engagement, and only thinking about the viral moment now. Like, you might be going viral on TikTok. You should be thinking, though, about how are you going to get that TikTok audience and that viral moment to take them to YouTube or to your podcast or to your website or your email list, because TikTok could stop showing your videos at any time and then you have no career anymore. So you need to diversify. So I think encouraging people, especially when they start, you know, start growing and start doing well, to start diversifying, because one platform is not enough.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. So, pairing with this question, what is a mistake that you have made as a creator that we could learn from?
Ooh, I mean, I think not like having a plan or prioritizing certain Actually, backtrack. This has to do with not having a plan, but this past year, I have pretty much exclusively posted vlogs, like on YouTube channel or my YouTube channel. I've only done vlogs. That has definitely decreased my engagement. It has decreased my followers. My views have gotten lower. And I think it's because I forgot about the providing value aspect of it. Like, vlogs are incredible for building an engaged audience after you have given them value. So people want to watch vlogs because now that you've provided value, they're like, wait, I want to learn more about her. I want to see her. I want to, you know, learn about her life. So then they're engaged in the vlogs. If you're only doing vlogs though, and you're not showing, like, providing any value, it's going to be hard to maintain that engaged of an audience. And so that was a mistake that I made this past year, was like forgetting about the value providing and only doing like, hey, here's my life. And it definitely cost me. So this next year in 2024, I'm like getting very serious and more intentional about my content. And I'm really excited for it.
Are you also creating for two brands, right? Because you're not just creating for your own personal brand. You're also creating for the Rella social media as well, right?
Yes. Yeah. But with Rella, we mainly do just short form content for that.
Why is that?
Resources and team, and we do have long form content for like how to videos, so like how to use Rella features on our YouTube channel. We also do webinars, so that's long form. We do quarterly webinars, but right now it's just like resources wise short form, and then the webinars are our long form content that we do like every other month to every quarter. Has like worked for us. And then my content is kind of like a supplement of Rella. Like, I talk about it all the time. I'm like constantly sharing it. So I kind of view like my content as also a funnel to Rella.
Well, this is going to lead into my next question then for you. So as a founder, a female founder creator, and you have like your own established brand, how are you using your personal brand to support this business brand?
Yeah. I mean, I talk about it all the time, but I also show it in effect. Like, hey, this is how I use it. Like, I'll for years I've been doing like plan with me, or here are my favorite apps, or here's how I manage my business. And now I actually get to like show how I use Rella, which is my tool. So it's not necessarily like a commercial for it, because it's not like I'm just talking about Rella and that's it. Like, I'm showing all the other things I'm using too, but I actually get to show like Rella in action, and my audience is already used to that type of content from me. So it's really organic, and it's like the best way, because it's like, hey, you guys see that I'm posting on TikTok, on Instagram, on YouTube, my podcast, on Rella's channel. If you ask me how I manage it all, like, here's how.
Why do you think founders should be using their personal brands to support the companies that they're trying to build?
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in like building in public and showing the behind the scenes and showing the team, because it just makes – it makes people feel more connected to the company. Like, now when someone uses Rella, obviously I want Rella to stand alone. Like, if I leave, like, I want Rella to still be a product on its own. Like, I don't want to be the lifeline of Rella, or else I don't think it's like a good product. So I do want it to be on its own. However, people will feel more connected to a product when they know who is behind it and like what they're doing. And, oh, I really like love the team, or I love that they're like including us in the mission, or they might even feel like they're a part of the team. Like, we did so many focus groups. We had so much feedback. We had hundreds of people talk about us the day that we launched because they felt like they were kind of a part of it, because they saw the journey from idea to launch. And so I think it's really important just to like build a community rather than just like building a product.
I think that's super huge and super valuable advice. And I think it's important for all of us. Like, I love this. I've been talking a lot lately about the idea of like creating in public. Like, how are you doing something? How are you making something happen? How are you doing the things? Especially when you can highlight not only your victories, but also your failures, because I feel like the failures is that humanizing, connecting element that most people will appreciate and want to like connect about most.
Exactly. Yep. And it just gives a human element to a product where a lot of companies don't have, you know, they can't do that. Like, huge companies that you're using aren't going to show the behind the scenes, but, you know, we have the advantage. They should, though. Yeah, they should. But like, we have the advantage that we're doing that. I do think eventually huge companies will probably do that. Like, you're going to see like a Jeff Bezos vlog in the future. Like, I think that you will actually see some of that stuff, because it does just like increase community and engagement.
Well, we've seen that. Like, I mean, our best, but I think our best example is Gary Vee. Like, Gary Vee has built in public. Mm-hmm. Like, now granted, he's put a ton of money, but he literally has like what, 5 people that their job is just to film him and edit his life and put it all over the internet in addition to what he's doing. But like, I think that there's a lot of value in that. I know a lot of people who have done that as well. Like, I think I saw this interview with Jimmy Donaldson, with Mr. Beast, where he was like, I've paid people, like, they just follow me around. Like, there's terabytes of footage of me, of just like my day to day and stuff. It's like, and my ultimate goal is like to sell it to Netflix, to like, for the right price in the right situation. That's like a year in the life of Mr. Beast or something like that. And it's got all this footage already in place to like make it happen.
Wow. You know, that's like, so smart.
Yeah. Like, Colin and Samira. So like, when Mr. Beast opened his burger place, they did that documentary where the two of them just followed people around and did that for like 24 hours of like him opening up this burger place and like what it was like and the chaos of it. Like, and it literally has a ton of like behind the scenes, how we felt, what he wanted, how he was thinking through it, versus like what we always see, which is this tailored poppy making things happen, or him giving and doing like sort of thing. That's been just really, it was really, I think the reason it was so successful is like, we never have seen that part of him before. And I think that that's the draw, is being able to see someone in a real way. Cause we've all had hectic, crazy, bad days at work, even mm-hmm. even the exactly. biggest people in the world.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I hope he does make it into a documentary. Like, it sells all of that footage.
Yeah. We would all watch it. It would probably be more successful than like Bridgerton up on Netflix. So they wanted to find a way to like revitalize their failures. That would probably be the best way to do it.
Seriously.
So, I would really enjoy getting to talk with you. Natalie, if you could give us all one like actionable thing that we can walk away with from our time together, what would that be?
Yeah. I mean, I would encourage anyone watching this that wants to become a content creator to just start making content. And like we said earlier, to like flex that content muscle, like post the video that's been sitting in your draft, edit the content that you've already filmed. Say, you know what, tomorrow I'm going to film something and I'm going to post it, and it might be bad and it might not get views, but you have to just start. And so if you're interested in being a creator, everyone starts at zero and just get started literally today.
I love it. Where can we follow you on the socials, on the places online?
Yeah, you can follow me at Natalie Barbu across all social media platforms, The Real Real Podcast, and then you can check out Rella at getrella.com.
Love it. Thank you so much for your time, Natalie. You were wonderful to talk to. Remember, you and everyone listening are impossibly amazing. Until next week, peace. Okay.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Women of YouTube podcast. We would love to know what you thought about this latest episode, so make sure to tag us with #WomenOfYouTube with your thoughts.